A person should be able to get plenty of potassium from a natural diet. Don't use refined grains, refined sugars, alcohols, refined proteins, and you should have no difficulty at all. Do you? Potassium does something special for nerves. It may not be a deficiency of potassium, but rather the specific toxicity that potassium has for nerves that makes your twitch go away. So let me suggest a little simple remedy for you, and that is a hot compress for about 10 minutes over your eye, and that should give you several hours, hopefully twitch-free. And then it should help to heal the twitch. Now, interestingly enough, these kinds of twitches from nerves and muscles are often associated with a food sensitivity. So the same thing that I said to the lady about asthma might be helpful to you, and I'd be happy to talk with you about that also. Question number, what is it, six, seven?
I was just going to ask, you know, talking about cheese, kind of laboring the point.
Okay, a cheese on pizza.
Okay.
Listen, don't give up pizza just because you give up cheese. Oh, if you want a delicious pizza, just make some of these nice, delicious substitute cheeses. And they're easy to make. We have a whole section in our cookbook called Eat for Strength, which you'll be able to see. Just get your wife to read that section, copy down some recipes, or buy the book, and you are in business. Question number eight. Number eight.
First, I'm going to ask my question, and then I'm going to tell you why I ask it.
Okay.
Do you think there's any benefit just drinking a cup of hot water?
Okay. Question is, do I think there is any benefit in drinking a cup of hot water? Yes, indeed. In the morning, when people have a little constipation maybe, if they take a cup of hot water, this starts what is called the gastrocolic reflex. Gastro means stomach, colic means colon. So the gastrocolic reflex is a reflex there that can help people to evacuate the colon very nicely. So it's a very good help in that regard.
Well, I'll tell you why I asked
that. All right.
I have an uncle.
Uh-huh.
He's 92 years old.
Can you all hear in the back?
He was never in the hospital in his mind.
Okay.
Just about 3 years ago, he fell off his roof and hurt his shoulder.
Yes.
The only time he was ever in the hospital.
Yes.
And when he was in the hospital, he insisted on his hot water every morning.
Uh-huh.
And they couldn't understand it. But he had been convinced that this hot water was doing him some good, and I tried it. Did you ever try to drink a cup of hot water?
Yes. Tastes good?
No, I didn't continue with it, but I'm seriously thinking of taking it up. So he made it to 92 without being in the hospital.
Okay, 92-year-old man who had a little bout of shoulder injury and was in the hospital, and he insisted on his cup of hot water, and it was a very good. If he could live to be 92 drinking a cup of hot water every day, maybe it has some additional value. By the way, if you've never tried it, try hot water instead of cold water. Cold water hurts the mouth, and it also slows down the digestion. But if you take some hot water, not lukewarm, but not scalding hot, not like some people take their coffee, that should never be. Things that are too hot or too cold should not be eaten. Leave them in the mouth until they have come to mouth temperature before you swallow them. And they'll be much more helpful for the stomach. But take hot water. It's nice and refreshing. Question number, what is it, nine?
You spoke about the effects of caffeine.
Yes.
I think you said that the decaffeinated coffee still has the same bad effects.
Question is about the decaffeinated drinks and whether they still have bad effects. The studies that have been done on comparing coffee and the decaffeinated drinks like coffee or decaffeinated tea, and also some other thing that's used as a control thing, such as water or a little apple juice or some other thing of that nature, shows no difference in the cancer-producing potential of coffee and the decaffeinated coffees.
This indicates something other than caffeine.
That's right. It's not caffeine. It's something else. You see, there is a cluster of alkaloids in all of these drinks: coffee, tea, colas, and chocolate. There are many other things in these drinks that injure the body besides the alkaloids. The methylxanthines, you may remember, these are among the alkaloids, and they have been shown to increase the risk that a woman might have fibrocystic breast disease. And we recognize fibrocystic breast disease does slightly increase a woman's risk of getting cancer of the breast. Cancer of the breast is a very serious and very common disease of women. By the way, concerning cheese, I forgot to tell you, in 84, in January, the Journal of Epidemiology, a very prestigious journal in America, published an article on fatal prostate cancer in men. And they had taken a large number of men, 6,700. These were Seventh-day Adventist men in California, and they'd studied them for a 20-year period. For this disease, cancer of the prostate. They studied a number of other things too, but this one was the one that was the subject of this report. And they found five things that increased the risk of fatal prostate cancer. Number one was being overweight. Well, this was one of them. It was not the most important thing. Meat eating, milk, cheese, and eggs. All of those five things, as each one was added to another, it made the risk of getting fatal prostate cancer go up. So I recommend to men, don't be overweight, don't eat meat, milk, eggs, or cheese. I'm going to tell you some more about that after a little bit. Question number 10. Oh, did I?
I want to ask about the drink such as Postum.
All right, question about Postum. Right after Janet finishes and I come back, don't let me forget to tell you, I want to tell you Dr. Bruce Ames' list. He has two food lists, good list and bad list. And you remind me of that if I forget to bring that up. Question number 10.
I was interested in when you're talking about the effects of caffeine on the unborn life.
Yes.
Have there been any studies on the effects of caffeine in unborn humans in terms of you're saying about effects in the sex gland?
Okay, question is if there have been any studies on the sex glands of humans with the mother taking caffeinated beverages during the pregnancy. And the answer is not that I am aware of. However, there have been some studies on the caffeinated drinks on pregnancy. And we feel that it's a very unfortunate thing for a woman to use the caffeinated beverages during pregnancy. The placenta gets bigger and birth defects are more likely to occur. A study done in Michigan showed that if a woman drank as much as 6 cups of coffee per day, she had a 13 out of 14 chance of having an unwanted outcome of the pregnancy. 13 out of 14 with 6 cups of coffee per day. In the state of Utah, where they have a lot of Mormons, like Seventh-day Adventists, do not believe in drinking coffee or any caffeinated drink. And because Utah has a large Mormon population, it is felt that their lack of coffee drinking habits is that thing that makes Utah have the lowest incidence of infant mortality and morbidity than any other state in the Union. All right, at this time, Janet Gideon is going to talk with you about a little topic that I think you will find most interesting. Thank you.
I'd like to ask the gentleman who passed out.
Question.
This question is regarding eating sweetness.
Yes.
What about fruit juice?
Okay, question is about fruit juices between meals. Actually, fruit juice represents the business part of whatever it is you have juiced, like an apple. That part that you don't have to work on to digest, that part is thrown away. And that part that you must make the pancreas and the stomach and the liver and the gallbladder and so forth to digest, that part is what is in the juice. So don't take anything between meals nourishing. Take only water or clear herb teas. We'll take this one question and then I'll answer the gentleman's question over here. Question is about cough drops. That's just eating candy. Now, the gentleman over here asked me the question about the use of postum, and I'd like to talk with you about Dr. Bruce Ames. Now, Bruce Ames is the biggest name in cancer research today. He is a man from the University of California out at Berkeley. And anybody who has had any laboratory experience at all is familiar with Bruce Ames' name. He has a cancer test by his name. It's called the Ames Test for Cancer. Now, Bruce Ames is a researcher who often writes in the newspaper, contrary to most researchers who just stay behind doors in their laboratory. But not so with Bruce Ames. He often gets in the newspaper. And one of the things that he says is that there are two groups of foods, bad group and a good group. Now, Janet let you know right at the beginning that we promote a vegetarian diet. And as a physician, I am very frank with my patients that a vegetarian diet is the very best diet that a person can have these days. Take them the world over. Reasons why people are vegetarians is because of cosmetic reasons. People age less. For religious reasons, now that would include the Indians who have sacred cows and also members of the vegan society, both in this country as well as in Europe. These people, for compassionate reasons, do not feel that animals should be used for human consumption. And then a third reason is poverty. Now, I like the economy of serving a vegetarian diet. The month that we became vegetarians in our family, that month we cut our food bill to 60% of what it had been before. Although we were trying everything under the sun that might appeal to a vegetarian palate, we were amazed at how much less expensive it was even to buy these things that we just imported macadamia nuts from Hawaii, and we used all the meat substitutes and any kind of kiwi fruit from New Zealand. We spared nothing to make the vegetarian diet palatable. And even so, it was not as expensive as what we had been spending on a non-vegetarian diet. We like that. We still do. Now, the reason why we became vegetarians in our family had to do with health reasons. And that's why Seventh-day Adventists are vegetarians, because of health reasons. I remember when we started thinking about this matter of being vegetarians. My husband brought an article home one day, Science, which is the largest scientific publication in the world, and in that was an article telling about the increased cancer rates in people who are not vegetarians. And so we began to study this matter. And we, since my husband is an internist and a cardiologist, we have been interested in that very much. And if you draw this line to represent the number of people in the United States who die of heart disease, we can put 56% there as the mortality rate among meat-eating Americans. But not all Americans are meat eaters. Some are what we call ovo-lacto-vegetarians. You know what that is? That they use dairy products and eggs, but no flesh foods. We'll draw this kind of line for the ovo-lacto-vegetarians. Their mortality rate is 39% from heart disease. But not all vegetarians are ovo-lacto-vegetarians. There are some who are what we call total vegetarians. They use no animal products, not even milk or eggs. For these, we would draw a line only this long. 14% is the mortality rate from heart disease in this group. For cancer, it's exactly the same thing. 25% is the mortality rate in meat-eating Americans, 15% in the ovo-lacto-vegetarians, and less than 9% in the total vegetarians. Now, Bruce Ames has, and the National Academy of Sciences, and a large number of other individuals, organizations, and researchers who have studied this question of cancer and its relationship to diet, say that that there are two lists of foods. Good food, good list, and a list not so good. Now, let's take the good list. What do you think would be on Bruce Ames' good list? Fruits, what else? Vegetables and whole grains. That's right. All right, now let's take his bad list. What do you suppose would be number one on his bad list? Well, I'm sure you will just follow right along in my reasoning. I probably wouldn't be presenting this to you if he didn't support my thesis. Well, actually, it's the other way around. I wouldn't be a vegetarian if this were not the fact. You see. So, among bad foods, animal products is number one. Now, animal products are meat, milk, eggs, and cheese. The National Academy of Sciences agrees with this. Probably some of you saw their large report that came out in 82. I happened to be in New York at the time that this report came out. I think it was June the 14th in 82 when it came out. And the New York Times had a whole page on the Academy's report. I was delighted. The Chicago Tribune had a half page, and the Los Angeles Times had a half page, and the Detroit News had a whole page on it. It was widely. That was the last time you heard about it. That one day. You know what happened the next day? Well, I'm sure you know what happened. I know you know what happened. Commercial concerns began to put a squelch on the thing, and it was 2 years later before you ever heard of it. How many of you heard of the National Academies? It was a big thing for one day only. My little hometown newspaper of Columbus, Georgia had a little blurb on it, I suppose about a tenth of a page devoted to it. They had a nice little cartoon, though. They had all the essentials. Animal products were mentioned there. Pickled things were also mentioned, and Bruce Ames doesn't mention that in his group, but what do you suppose Bruce Ames would have as number two? Well, refined grains come way down here. Well, refined food products way down here. White sugar, white flour products. The National Academy also has refined grains and other refined foods on their list. So that's way down. That's number five. What's number two? Coffee is number four. Caffeinated beverages, well, the brown drinks, because whether they're caffeinated or decaffeinated. Brown beverages. All right, let's go back to number two. No, not sugar. Sugar is down here with the salt, not salt. Salted foods and things are involved in it. Fats are up here in the animal products group. No. Alcohol is down here in the refined foods group. Dark toast. And all scorched foods. Scorched foods of any kind increase your risk of getting cancer. Scorched proteins are not good for us. Scorched fats, not good for us. Scorched carbohydrates, not good for us. Now, what about this long time thing that you have heard, that burnt toast is good for gastrointestinal upset? Have you heard that? Well, forget that. That's not good counsel. Study done by published in the Journal of the American Medical Association about 8 years ago said that you'd be better off to do nothing than to take burnt toast, that just drinking a glass of water would be better if you had had some kind of poisoning or had a gastrointestinal upset than to take the dark toast. The burnt toast. So we feel that what you should do is to take charcoal. Charcoal is altogether different from burnt toast. Charcoal has, if you look at charcoal under the microscope, a little granule of charcoal will look like this. The hard parts, the cellulose parts, are left after the soft parts, the gases and resins and things like that, are burned out, and it leaves crevices and holes and cracks that can adsorb any kind of poison almost. There are just a few poisons that are not adsorbed onto charcoal. And every poison control center in the United States, every regional poison, all of the 27 regional poison control centers in the United States, beginning January of 85, started putting charcoal as its number one all-round advice when a person calls in for any kind of poisoning. So what happens is that there is a charge that because of the high temperatures involved, a little charge develops in these little crevices, and also the capillary attraction makes materials flow down into these crevices and cracks, and it's extremely good for as a substance to adsorb toxins. If you put 1 quart of charcoal in a chamber that will hold 80 quarts of, let's say, ammonia gas, which is toxic to humans, that 1 quart of charcoal will take up all 80 quarts of ammonia gas. Then when you put the whole back into a quart jar, you have 80 quarts of ammonia gas in that one jar. But let's go on and get the next thing. The next thing in Bruce Ames' list is that of mushrooms. Mushrooms have hydrazine and benzene diazonium. Benzene diazonium. Both of these are naturally occurring. They're not added. They're naturally occurring in the mushrooms, and they can cause us to have cancer. Now, from your reaction, I assume that you had the same enjoyment of mushrooms that I did. And when Dr. Bielitoth first came out with this about 12 years ago, I wept all the way down to the market. But once I got there, I comforted myself because of all the price. All that I could find were so expensive. And so I was certainly glad if I were going to have to give up something, it was something that was expensive. Now, the next thing is that of damaged potatoes. Now, these are white potatoes. If a digging tool has injured a potato, do not eat it. Do not trim that part away and eat the rest. So you must examine your potatoes before you buy them. Now, if you dig your own potatoes and you chop some in two, you may go right ahead and eat them, provided you eat them within the first 2 days after they have been dug. But after that, 3 days and onward, don't eat potatoes that have been injured by the digging tool, because in their repair process, they produce a substance that is toxic to the human body and can increase your risk of getting cancer. Now, there are two other kinds of potatoes you don't want to eat. One is that kind that has turned green. Now, what is green? What makes things green? Well, that's what has caused it, but I mean the chemical substance. What is it in nature that makes all things green? Chlorophyll, that's right. So some people will peel off that chlorophyll, which is quite helpful, and throw that away and eat the rest of the potato, which has the solanine in it. Don't do that. What the chlorophyll, the presence of the chlorophyll there is only there for one reason, and that's to give you an indicator that that potato, having been sunburned, is now producing substances that are not good for your body. So don't peel off the chlorophyll. That's the only edible part of it once it has turned green. Now, one other potato, don't eat it. Don't eat the whole potato. If it gets a little mushy spot on it, a little soft mushy spot, throw the whole potato away. Don't trim that off and eat the rest. It isn't helpful for you. What is that? Throw it away if it's 3 days old or older. Question here.
Yes. Dark toast and full toast. Is any toast safe?
Okay, the question is any toast safe? And the answer is yes. You can toast toast so that it's light golden brown. Now, when it turns golden brown, that is not the first part of burning. I'm glad you brought that up. That is a reaction that we call in food chemistry the Maillard reaction. Now, the Maillard reaction is a browning reaction. It's altogether different from burning. It's not the same. It's not just the first phase. Now, when the Maillard reaction occurs, this browning causes a hydrolysis of starch. And it happens just in seconds. Now, here's another principle that you need to know. And that is, well, let me ask you a question. Have you ever wondered why it is that so many people are allergic to wheat or are allergic to gluten or rice or oats? The reason is that we don't cook our grains long enough. We have those grains that are most likely to cause people to have food sensitivities are rice, corn, wheat, and oats. Those are the commonest ones. And those are the ones that we don't cook very much. We put rice on, cook it for 30 minutes, and serve it. Rice should be cooked for 2.5 to 3 hours. Okay. What do you have after you've cooked rice for 2.5 to 3 hours? Well, I'm sure that many of you are thinking that you have an inedible mush, but you won't. Here's what to do. Just take a skillet, put your rice in it like this, and put it on a burner, and just take a spatula or a spoon and stir it gently for 3 to 5 minutes on moderately high heat. Just stir it back and forth. Your house will fill with the nicest aroma, nutty type of aroma. Now, use care, because you have a dry skillet and you have dry rice in it. And right after that nice nutty odor, and a few of the little grains will start to pop just like popcorn, just after that comes the smoke. So you want to, and we've already discussed how you don't want grains, you don't want anything made too dark. So once you've had that, then you immediately pour it up into a pot that has water in it. And I like to put it on at the same time. I put the water on 2.5 cups to 1 cup of rice. So I put the water on and start that to boiling. At the same time that I start this little occupational therapy here with the rice. And it's a lot of fun. Once it starts popping, then you just pour it right up into that. And the hot rice poured into the water will start it to boiling. And then you have to, that's a little excitement in the kitchen, because it usually will boil over right there at that point unless you work with it just delicately. So it requires just the proper amount of skill. You housewives or cooks, men or women, will enjoy the little excitement that comes about by doing this toasting. Now, two things happen. Number one is that it makes your rice have a nice nutty flavor. It enhances the flavor just by this toasting process. And the second thing is that you can cook it 5 hours, and every rice grain will fall apart from every other. It's just a very nice little process to make it. By the way, if your children... What is that? Well, rice, you know, that other kind, is we call that refined. But the real rice is the kind that I'm talking about. Now, let's say your children don't like oatmeal because of that sticky quality. You know, some children just don't like that. It doesn't feel good in the mouth, and so they don't like that. If you want to eliminate the faintest trace of that, then put the oatmeal in a skillet and toast it before you start the boiling process, and it will eliminate the faintest trace of that. Question? Oh, I'm so glad you asked me, because my hostess is here tonight, and I want to get this over tonight. When you go home, take a nice ripe banana and peel it. Put it in a plastic bag and put that in your freezer. In the morning when you get up, take it out, break it into about a dozen pieces, and put that in your blender. Pour into the blender a little pineapple juice. Turn on your blender, and in seconds, you have a fruit smoothie. It's the consistency of soft melted ice cream. Pour that over your waffle, or over your oatmeal, or over your rice, or your cracked wheat, or any kind of cereal that you wish. Millet is a very good one. Buckwheat is also good, especially if you mix it about 1/3 to 2/3 rice with buckwheat. It's very good. Don't be locked into a monotonous pattern with your breakfast. Waffles are excellent. The best breakfast you can have is a nice waffle made from the ground up just by putting rolled oats, and an equal quantity of water, and a tiny bit of salt, just a few grains of salt. Put that into your waffle iron and bake it until it's nicely toasted. No pale waffles. We don't want any anemic-looking waffles. We want them all to look nice and brown. And you all understand why, because of the Maillard reaction. That's the good kind for you. Then take the waffle, put that on your plate, put the fruit smoothie on it, sprinkle a few shreds of toasted coconut on top of that, and eat that with a fork. You will not be disappointed. It is outstanding. Question?
What can you use in place of pineapple?
All right, pineapple juice. Okay, use any kind of sweet juice, orange juice, apple juice, any kind of sweet juice. Grape juice makes a very beautiful fruit smoothie. Okay, Herbalife diet. Let me talk with you about that later. I have a bug to put in your ear. Question in the back. Oh, what if you don't like bananas? I can hardly imagine that anyone would not like bananas, but you can freeze any fruit. Apple, you can freeze an apple. You can freeze an orange. Take an orange and peel it, cut it a few times, take out the seeds, put that in your freezer, then put that in your blender and pour some fruit juice on it and you have another kind of fruit smoothie. Take cantaloupe when you can buy cantaloupe, a dozen for a dollar. Maybe that's only in the South. Peel them. Cut them in two, scoop out the seeds, put that in your blender, chop it several times, and put that in your blender, and then whiz it just a little bit. Pour that in your freezer, put it in your freezer, and when it's a hot summer day, take some of that out, chip it with an ice pick, put that in your blender, and use it just as it is. It is a wonderful cantaloupe sherbet. Again, you will not be disappointed. Question?
Soy milk.
You may use a little soy milk. It's high, some of it is high in sugar, so don't overuse soy milk. Yes? Yes. Bring it to the boil. Reduce the heat until it just barely, just like that. And you cover it and boil it for 2.5 to 3 hours. But do you have a crock pot? Here is what to do. The night before you're going to use it, put it in the crock pot, turn it on. Takes 42.5 seconds of cook's time. You just put the top on. The next morning when you go in there, it's ready to go. All you have to do is just to unplug it, pick it up, and take your beautiful crock pot and put that on your table. It's a nice serving dish, and you just don't have to worry with it at all. It's the nicest way to make a cooked cereal. Do oatmeal the same way. It will not harm it to cook all night. So just put it in, slow cooker, and the next morning it's all ready. Okay, I'll take those who have questions right now. Would you raise your hands and I'll give you numbers. Number 1, number 2, number 3, number 4, number 5, number 6, and number 7, the lady in the back. Number 1. Okay. All right. Question is, millet appears to cook in 45 minutes. So does rice. It will appear to cook in 45 minutes. But what you do is you just take a little sample of that and you whisk that up in your blender and you put that under your microscope and you keep on cooking it until it all turns to an amorphous substance. But maybe you don't have a microscope in your kitchen. Mine's equipped with a microscope. So since you don't have a microscope in your kitchen, I'll tell you, you just have to keep on cooking millet too.
You have to keep adding water?
No. You put enough water at the beginning, then turn it way down. So it's just way down.
Mm-hmm.
Question number two. Janet told me that 2.5 cups with millet may make it a little more dry than most people would like it. Personally, I like it like that because I want to put a lot of fruit smoothie on it. But maybe you like it a little creamy, in which case you'd put more water with it. Okay, question number two. Who has number two? Okay, statement was made. Peanuts, citrus fruits, and what was the other? Raisins. Were injurious because of the arsenic and two other deadly sprays used. Goes through the shell of a peanut. Well, what are we going to use instead of peanut butter? Oh, I'll tell you. Raise your own peanuts, that's one way. But have you ever tried almond butter? Oh, yummy, yummy. That's the very word for it. Go to a health food store and get almond butter. We need to make that catch on. No, I've made it myself. All you need is something like a Champion juicer or to make it in your own kitchen. Or any kind of auger type of mill. Just put the almonds in and out comes almond butter. You don't need to put one drop of oil. No, it's quite oily, just like peanuts. Question number three. All right. Okay, what's the difference between charcoal briquettes, charred toast, and the charcoal that you may take by mouth for poisonings? By the way, I believe that every family in America should have charcoal in its medicine cabinet. We were just recently in France, and my husband and I did a seminar there. While we were there, we just happened to mention about charcoal and that we were using it for a lot more things in the United States. And the doctors who were there with us sort of did sort of like a ho-hum what's new with us because they've been using charcoal there for a long time. Every French couple who have children, pediatrician tells them get charcoal and put that in your medicine cabinet just in case the baby happens to swallow something that you don't know what it is. So that's the charcoal that you want to take by mouth is activated charcoal or regular charcoal, but you usually should get that from a pharmacy or from a health food store or some other place where charcoal that could be taken internally would be used. Charcoal briquettes are not proper for medicinal use. We're going to tell you about how to use charcoal tomorrow. We have a whole section on it tomorrow. So come back and bring your neighbors, especially those who have children. But anybody, it's good for a lot of things that, you'll be amazed at how many things it's the specific, the treatment of choice for. Don't use briquettes and don't use charred toast. Question number four. Or is it three? Four?
You mentioned cooking a certain number of hours. What about using a microwave?
Okay, the question is about a microwave. I wish I had something really authoritative to tell you about microwaves, and I really don't know. But I will tell you this. I have lived through a number of different kinds of machines that have rays or waves in my 30 years of experience in medicine, and I'm always a little leery of any kind of machine that gives off any kind of ray. Some of you will remember about X-ray. We didn't know until the dentist started losing their hair off their fingers and finally their fingernails and eventually the whole ends of their fingers and started getting leukemia and a variety of things that radiologists and dentists and others who exposed themselves without protection to X-rays, that X-rays weren't good for us. We didn't learn until about, 10 or 15 years ago, that there was a change in irradiated food that was injurious to the body. I understand they are still radiating food, however. sonograms. When they first came out, everybody was just, it was a toy. Everybody who got pregnant had, they were shown the image of their baby on the sonogram. We don't do that anymore. Now we recognize that that the baby does react to the sonogram. Are microwaves going to be the same? Well, we just don't know. It hasn't been used long enough. So I say that if a person has a microwave, put it way down on that end of the kitchen and do your food preparation right here. And if you can get your microwave out in the laundry room, that might even be better. Take your food out there and put it in and turn it on and then run back to the area on the other side. Because one of these days we may have the melted bone disease or who knows what else that comes from that. Yes, you can get your own tested. If you've got a microwave oven, by all means, just put your microwave right in your car and take it down to the health department. They have the equipment there. You see, they have to go into these public restaurants and check their microwaves for leakage. And so you just take yours down there and plug it in and turn it on, and they take their instrument. You can buy one for about $20. It isn't expensive.
They come there and check it
themselves. Yes, well, you can purchase one of the little instruments yourself for about $20 to check your own microwave. But if you don't want to make that investment, just take your microwave down. Question number 5.
First of all, we sent for a paper from you, Dr. Dresch, and we were able to cure my husband's ulcer with the chocolate remedy.
Yes. Good.
The other thing...
I appreciate that testimonial. Okay. All right. Well, I'll just have to say that it's just nobody's heard much about barley green, and nobody knows much about barley green. We have been trying it just a little for a few different kinds of things, but whether it's good or not, we just really don't know. The first time that we had heard of its being, when I heard about barley green, I just put that in the category with all of these other things that come and go and that I don't pay any attention to anyway, and I did the same thing with barley green. But we were in Texas, and right next to Houston, where the MD Anderson Hospital is, and a lady there who was a nurse told us about an experience that they had had at the MD Anderson Hospital in treating two cancer patients who had lymphoma with barley green. The MD Anderson Hospital, it's the largest cancer hospital in the world, and some of their research will lead them to do unorthodox things. And so they had been trying that for a couple of patients, but then they tried it for some others, and it seemed to work for two, didn't seem to work for some others. So we have been trying it on some of our cancer patients also, but we consider it a very research type of thing, and certainly not the kind of thing that we could say everybody go out for cancer and buy barley green. It's harmless so far as we know. So if it doesn't do any good, it probably won't do any harm, but I really don't know much. Question number 6.
Can you discuss the nightshade plants?
Nightshades are tomatoes, potatoes, eggplant, and peppers. Tobacco is also in that family, and about 30,000 other species. It's a large family of plants. Gets its name, probably. The British, you know, have a very wry sense of humor, and the deadly nightshade is in that same family, and so somebody has suggested that the British gave it that name because it draws down the shade on a long night. I don't know whether that's how it got its name, but at any rate, they do produce solanine, and solanine does cause some people's joints to hurt. And there are some people that if you take them off the nightshades, tomatoes, potatoes, eggplant, and peppers, their arthritis will clear up. I had a lady who came to me one Friday afternoon. A Seventh-day Adventist physician doesn't really enjoy getting a new patient who is going to have a really hard time with a lot of things to discuss on a Friday afternoon, but she felt she had to come. Her husband called me and said she was just whipped out with her arthritis. So I said, well, bring her along. She'd had it for 8 years. He told me on the phone she hadn't cleaned out her closets in 8 years. And that her children were growing up without her, and she was just totally whipped out, and she was at a crossroads. She said to her husband often that she just wished she could die so that he could get another wife who would rear their children. they had small children, and they were just growing up, and she was almost a stranger to them because she was so constantly sick. She never could go out with the children anywhere. And so when he brought her to see me, she was weeping. She wept several times during our interview. I spent an hour and a quarter with her, and I told her everything that I could think of for arthritis from the standpoint of natural remedies. She was very happy to hear what I had to say. She was considering whether she would go to Mexico and get their treatments down there, or whether she'd go up to Rome and get their treatments up, the cortisone or whatever they give there, or go down to a local doctor and get gold shots. And she didn't want any of those treatments, but she just didn't know where to turn. When she came in, she was so tender and swollen that when I tried to help her up a little step into my office, I took her by the arm, and where I took her there by the arm, it was painful there. Her fingers were swollen so that she couldn't bend her fingers any more than that. Just swollen and stiff and strutted out from the arthritis. All of her joints were painful and tender and swollen and red. I threw the book at her, so to speak, and I was a little sorry that I did give her so much, because the next day was going to be a day that I was usually not available to the telephone, and I knew she was going to need help because she didn't know anything about how to cook for herself and wasn't able to do too much. So normally I would keep very close contact with such a patient, but because of the fact that the next day was the day that I celebrate the Sabbath, I wouldn't be in telephone contact. So I said, call me first thing Sunday morning. Sunday morning came and went, and no telephone call. Monday, I thought, well, I've got her telephone number at the office. I'll just call her on Monday morning. But Monday, when I got to the office, by that time, I decided not to call her. She'd probably gone to Mexico, and it would be embarrassing to both her and me. So I just decided to drop it. 6 weeks later, I was downtown in Columbus doing some shopping, and suddenly a lady started walking very rapidly toward me. And when she came up to me, she said, "Aren't you Dr. Thrash?" And I said, "Yes." And she said, "Well, I am so-and-so Sailor. And look here what I can do." And she did that. She said, "I'm sorry I didn't call you the next day, but the next day I felt so much better. By Sunday, I whirled in and cleaned 3 closets." She said, "The next day, my son had a little league baseball game, and I went to see my son play. And I have been so busy getting back into the world of things that I just have not had the opportunity to call." Within 3 days, she was already feeling much better. Now, most people who go off the nightshades don't feel good that quickly. It may take them a good bit longer than that. We had one young lady who had hay fever, and she went. Took her off the nightshade. It took her about a week. But we have had some that have taken as long as 3 months, and some don't get any help whatsoever. So if they've been off the nightshade for 3 months, just put the person back on. Nightshades are not causing their arthritis. Question number 7. Saccharin and NutraSweet should both be eliminated from the diet. They're unhelpful for us. A lot of reasons for that, and the reports have just been rolling in from NutraSweet. When it first came out, aspartame was considered to be the answer to all of the sweetener problems, but it was hardly on the market good before the reports were coming in the medical literature against the use of them.
You have been listening to another special American Christian Ministries presentation. This is a digital recording for optimum sound quality. International copyright, all rights reserved. To order a copy of this or other presentations, or for a free catalog, please call toll-free 800-233-4450. International calls dial 717-652-7000. You may also order from our secure website at www.AmericanChristianMinistry.org. There you will discover the largest selection of authentic Adventist preaching available. You can trust ACM. There's no compromise here. If American Christian Ministries has been a blessing to you, why not take a moment just now and send us a note or an email with your testimony? We'll share it with the speakers and volunteer workers to encourage them.
Your prayers and continued financial support are very important to ensure the continuation of this ministry as we help prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ. He is coming soon.